Why would they? He took a long drag from his cigarette. Doesn't make any sense to me. It didn't to Victoria either. She laid a photograph of Angelina on the table. Where is Angelina Beckham?
Is that her?
You know it is.
Never heard of her,
he said. Why did you go to Tyler Tompkins' memorial service? She asked. A quick year shift, just to trip him up.
I didn't go to her service.
Why were you having a smoke in the parking lot across the street?
I got a better question. Why did you dumb shits think Cutter killed her?
Cutter, a name the media had created. Obviously, he'd been following the story in the news. Did Cutter kill her?
Ask Cutter.
I am asking. He took another drag on his cigarette, his eyes narrowing. It was one of those breakthrough moments that could never be duplicated, and Victoria could only hope that the video would show that he was talking about himself in the third person.
Cutter doesn't do that black shit, he said. You should know that, genius.
Victoria pushed the other photograph toward him. She hated to talk on a psychopath's level, but sometimes it was necessary. Did Cutter do Angelina Beckham? He glanced at the photo, a sick smile creasing his lips.
He would.
If she needed to be reminded to suck the pink finger. Did Angelina need that reminder? He shook his head, then shrugged.
Fuck if I know.
Never seen the woman before. Victoria locked eyes with him, refusing to blink. He didn't look away. She could have worked him harder, pushed his buttons, asked him the same question over and over, 50 different ways. But she didn't see the point. She believed him. Chapter 54. Ridd met me at the entrance to the FBI's Miami field office. He'd been right. I got through the security clearance checkpoint in the main lobby, but no farther. Santos was keeping a tight fist on the interrogation. She probably wouldn't have even allowed me in the building if Ridd hadn't been with me. She should at least let you observe, I said. You're one of the lead Miami-Dade detectives on the task force. We were alone in a windowless waiting area. I was pacing. Ridd was on the couch, seated beneath the bronze plaque that honored fallen agents from the Miami office.
She thinks I'm a pipeline to you, he said.
Maybe we shouldn't have canceled that redo of the polygraph this morning.
Abe, you're in no shape to take another polygraph.
You can see that. You're sitting right here with me. But what if Carmen thinks I'm just afraid to retake the test? Ridd gave me a sobering look.
You know how I feel about it.
He'd said it when Carmen had suggested a second examination. He wasn't going to come right out and say it again, but his advice, as a friend, was reheard nonetheless. What you probably need is a lawyer. Let's see how this plays out, I said. I stopped and dialed Angelina's mother again. No answer. It was the same with her father. I didn't bother leaving a fourth message for them to call me. I wanted to be the one to tell them about Cutter in custody. After the way Jake had spoken to me before their press conference, it troubled me that neither one would answer. You go ahead and call them, Ridd. See if they pick up. He dialed. First Margaret, then Jake. Neither one answered. I dialed the main number at the hotel, then Angelina's sister. I tried Sloan at the command center. No sign of Angelina's parents. This is getting weird, I said.
Getting weird?
The expression on Ridd's face had almost asked that question, but he'd caught himself. It could have been funny if this weren't so unfunny. My phone rang and I answered without even checking the number, hoping that it was Jake or Margaret.
It was Ed Brumble.
I heard they got Cutter.
We hadn't talked since the message I'd left him about talking to the reporter, but that already seemed like ancient history. How did you hear?
I read every press release, sugar industry issues. Cortina's just put one out on Tommy Salvo, basically disowning him.
Can you send that to me?
Sure. I can also tell you a thing or two about Tommy Salvo. I took his deposition 20 years ago in the class action lawsuits.
The wage shorting cases?
Right. He was one of the supervisors who reviewed the task wages. And a lying son of a bitch.
My understanding is that he's in the Nicaragua operations now.
I saw that in the press release. And that's what really interests me. Compared to Central America, the old H2 program on the Florida plantations was like Club Med.
Ed, I'm looking for my wife. I don't have time to talk.
I understand. And hey, I'm really sorry about slipping up and mentioning Tyler to that reporter Saturday night, or Sunday morning, whenever it was.
Forget it.
But listen to me. Cortina's issued this press release proactively for damage control. They know the company is going to take serious heat.
Because one of their 10,000 employees turns out to be a killer?
I don't buy it. No, because Salvo left Nicaragua 3 months ago, just before the harvest season started in Central America, right before these killings started in Florida. Cortinas obviously knew he wasn't showing up for work, and they must have known he had a house that isn't very far from where the bodies were being dumped in the cane fields. But the company never told the FBI that Salvo would be on the radar. As far as the FBI knew, Salvo was in Nicaragua the whole time.
That seems like an important point, I said. But I'm having trouble connecting it to the only thing that matters right now, which is finding my wife.
It's one piece of the bigger puzzle, he said.
It explains Tyler Tompkins. We were getting warm.
How?
Tyler was trying to tell you about some kind of criminal conduct involving the Cortinas companies. The Central American operation is out of control. Do you know what the second most common killer of men in Nicaragua and El Salvador is? Chronic kidney disease. You know where 99% of those men work? In the sugarcane fields. It's a mystery illness. They don't know if it's exposure to pesticides or if the sugar companies are literally working these men to death. They call it the malady of the sugarcane. Healthy men in their 20s are ending up on dialysis and dropping dead. This is criminal, Abe.
Yeah, but I'm a prosecutor in Miami. Why would Tyler come to me about crimes in Central America?
She was blowing the whistle on her own client, and she trusted you.
Something or someone told her that Tommy Salvo was deep into what was happening in Central America. It bugged her that Cortinas didn't want local law enforcement interviewing him, even if he was involved in these serial killings.
Wait a minute, are you saying that Cortinas knew he was the killer?
No, I'm saying they didn't give a shit if he was or he wasn't, which is the way that this company has always operated. The only thing they cared about was the fact that Tommy Salvo has information about the malady of the sugarcane, and the last thing the company wanted was Salvo talking to the FBI. I think that's what Tyler Tompkins was trying to tell you. Maybe she uncovered something about his background, or maybe she just had a hunch about this guy because he was back in Florida illegally. But she was trying to tell you that local law enforcement needed to talk to Tommy Salvo.
I had to discount anything Ed said about Big Sugar. But he was actually making sense. It might have gotten her killed, he added. Except that Agent Santos seems pretty certain that Cutter didn't kill Tyler.
Maybe Agent Santos is wrong.
She also didn't think Cutter had anything to do with Angelina's disappearance.
She could be wrong, I said.
Or we could be missing something. My phone vibrated with an incoming text. It was from Angelina's mother.
Ed, thanks. I'll call you later, I said, and quickly hung up. Reed asked me something about the call, but I was too focused on Margaret's message to hear him. Important. You are going to get a phone call from the law office of Jeffrey Winters. Pick up the call. Do not ignore it. I knew Winters. He'd left the state attorney's office when Carmen promoted me, and not him to senior trial counsel. Hard to say who won. He was one of the top criminal defense lawyers in Miami. Rid, what do you know about this call from Jeffrey Winters? Rid looked at me confused.
Winters? Nothing. I wasn't buying it.
You're the one who's been telling me I need a lawyer. Did you and Margaret cook this up?
I haven't talked to Margaret.
I was getting angry. Rid, I can sniff this one out a mile away. Jake is not on my side. Margaret is. You told her I need a lawyer. She's paying for Winters behind Jake's back. That's what this call is about, isn't it?
Abe, I got nothing to do with this.
The door opened. One of the FBI agents on the Cutter task force stepped into the waiting area.
Detective Riddell, you can come in if you like. Agent Santos and I are available now.
What about Abe? He asked.
Sorry, task force only.
My phone rang. The caller ID said it was the law office of Jeffrey Winters.
You go ahead, I said. I'll wait.
Reed and the agent disappeared behind the door. My phone continued to ring. I had no desire to talk to Jeffrey Winters, but I suddenly did want to know if Reed had nothing to do with this, or if, for the first time since I'd known him, he'd lied to my face. One more ring, and I would have gone to voicemail. I picked up and said hello. Abe. I froze. Abe, it's me. I nearly dropped the phone. It was my wife.
Chapter 55. I reached the law office of Jeffrey Winters in 10 minutes. My phone conversation with Angelina had been short. Winters didn't want us talking on an unsecure line. It was important that we speak in private. She told me only that she was unhurt and that she had never been in any danger.
Never been in danger? I'll explain when you get here, she'd told me. And don't say a word to anyone until you meet with Jeffrey and me. I have to tell your parents. They know. And they didn't tell me. Weird was turning to weirder.
The law firm occupied the entire penthouse floor in a new high-rise in an old neighborhood along the Miami River, less than a mile from the criminal courts. Winter's spacious corner office had an impressive view of downtown Miami. To the south, I could see where he used to work. My office. The Boomerang. It had an ironic connotation as my once-missing wife rushed toward me and threw her arms around me.
I'm so sorry, Abe.
She was squeezing me tight and shaking with emotion. I squeezed back, looking over the top of her head and toward the window. There was not a sliver of space between us, and she was speaking into my shoulder.
I'm sorry I ran.
I broke the embrace. Her expression was tight with stress, but I'd seen women who'd actually been on the run, and Angelina bore none of the markings. She hadn't cut or colored her hair, no spray tan to darken her skin, no phony eyeglasses, no tinted contact lenses to make her blue eyes brown. If she'd been trying to look frumpy or heavier, the designer jeans and thin cashmere sweater weren't exactly doing the trick.
Ran from what? I asked.
Winters came toward us.
Let's talk this out, shall we?
Angelina took my hand and led me to the couch. We were sitting next to each other, but with so much unexplained, the hand-holding felt awkward, and we both let go. We were only inches apart, but it felt like much more. Her lawyer sat across from us in a leather armchair. Winters had always been a sharp dresser, even while on government salary, but if the office furnishings were any indication of his success in private practice, His wardrobe no longer depended on the once-a-year Hugo Boss sale. The French cuffs and perfectly pressed suit made me even more aware of my disheveled appearance. I was powered by caffeine, looking as though I'd been sleeping in my clothes, if I'd slept at all.
"First off, Abe," he said, "I want to be clear that even though I am Angelina's attorney and not yours, everything said in this room is privileged and protected under the marital privilege. Agreed?"
"Fine," I said, looking at Angelina. "But why do you have a lawyer?"
"My mother hired him for me," she said.
"When?"
"This morning, after I called her."
That explained why my in-laws had not returned my calls.
"So you spoke to your parents and hired a lawyer before you even called me?"
"Yes, but don't say it as if I did something wrong. I saw my mom on TV last night. She looked more upset than anyone. I had to call her first."
"I understand that part. It's talking to him first that bothers me."
Winter sat forward, addressing me.
"The timeline is that Angelina called her mother and Margaret called me. Her concern was that the family could bear financial responsibility for the costs that law enforcement incurred in the emergency response."
I looked at Angelina. "Because there was no actual emergency." She looked at Winters before answering.
"Go ahead and walk Abe through this from the beginning," he said. "It will make more sense that way."
I was getting the distinct impression that they had rehearsed this, but I listened. Angelina drew a breath and then began.
"Friday night was a bad night."
She quickly summarized what I already knew. It seemed hard to believe that barely a weekend had passed since the shattered beer bottle against our front door.
"After you left, I was scared to be alone in the house. I was too angry to ask you to come back, and I didn't want my mother to see me this upset. So I sucked it up and stayed."
She asked for some water, and Winters brought it to her. Then she continued.
"I couldn't fall asleep. I got up and watched TV for a while. The house started to make noises, creaking windows, the AC turning on and off. Even with the television on, I could hear those things, or imagine them. I went back to bed and lay there wide awake, afraid to turn out the lights. Thoughts were running through my mind. A serial killer was on the loose. 5 women were dead. A photograph of his latest victim was sitting on my cocktail table, hand-delivered to my mailbox by her killer. Why did he do that? Was he coming back for me? Who was going to stop him? A squad car was parked on our block, which made me feel a little safer. But why would the police agree to provide protection if I wasn't in serious danger? And what could they really do to stop a psychopath who was determined to make Abe Beckham's wife the next victim? I was starting to freak out. I decided. She drank more water.
"Take your time," said Winters.
"I couldn't just sit in my house and wait for a homicidal maniac to show up with a machete. But then it occurred to me. Cutter can't kill me if he doesn't know where I am. And he can't threaten my family at knife point and force them to divulge where I am if no one knows where I went. I decided to vanish."
"How? Where?"
I asked. "I didn't know. I was flying by the seat of my pants,"
Winters interjected.
"This is an important point, Abe. There is no evidence that Angelina's disappearance was anything but spontaneous and driven by fear. She didn't hoard cash in advance. She didn't change her appearance. She didn't have any fraudulent identification with her. She left her passport behind and had no prepaid tickets for domestic or international travel."
"How did you expect to pull this off?" I asked her.
"I panicked. You watch enough movies and you start to think that if you pin your hair up under a hat and put on a pair of sunglasses, you're good to go. But you have to buy things to live, and it has to be cash, because credit cards leave a trail. All I could scrape together in the house was about $175. I wasn't sure what to do, but one of the shows that came on while I was watching TV with all the other insomniacs was Pawn Stars. It's about normal-looking people getting cash for just about anything at a pawn shop. That's when I decided to pawn the jewelry. Samantha's jewelry, you mean? She averted her eyes, but only for a second, and then looked back at me. Would it make you happier if I sold my own ring? There was only one answer to that question. No. I knew about the strongbox, Abe. I'm the only one in the house who cleans closets. Angelina Rose went to her purse on the credenza and removed a plastic bag. I'm sorry, she said as she handed it to me. I got rid of the strongbox, but everything is here except for the rings, which you already have. I opened it. Samantha's diamond earrings and the wristwatch from Luther were inside, as well as some other things that weren't nearly as valuable. I was glad Angelina hadn't pawned them, but I wasn't in an appreciative frame of mind. My prosecutorial instincts were taking over, and I wanted to be the one asking questions. How did you get to the pawn shop? I walked past the police officer who was parked on our street. I went out the back and left the car in the driveway so he wouldn't see me. Why did you pick Pawn 24 in Little Havana? I could walk there. It was the closest pawn shop to our house that was open 24 hours. How did Jerko get the ring? Who? The homeless guy who sold the ring to the pawn shop. How did he get his hands on it? I knew the police would be looking for me, and I was afraid the shop owner might remember me. This guy happened to be sitting on the sidewalk a few doors down from the shop. I told him I'd pay him $50 if he went inside and sold the ring for me. You trusted him? I shouldn't have. When he came out, he refused to hand over the money until I gave him my iPhone on top of his $50 cut. I remembered my encounter with Jerko and the way he'd insisted that I give him my phone. You gave your phone to him? Yes. I needed the money. I couldn't power on the phone anyway. I could be tracked. How did your phone end up on the side of the Tamiami Trail? You'll need to ask Jerko. You didn't put it there? No. I pressed harder, perhaps a bit too prosecutorial. You didn't toss the phone onto the side of the road to make police think you had been murdered and dumped in the Everglades like Tyler Tompkins? I was running from the man who killed Tyler. Dumping my phone there wasn't going to make him think he killed me. That makes no sense. Unless you were running from something else. Do I have to say it again? No. I didn't toss my phone on the Tamiami Trail. You're asking the wrong person. It was getting a little icy in the room, and Winters felt the need to intervene. Let's all take a deep breath, he said. I kept quiet. Angelina rose from the couch and took the armchair beside her lawyer, both of them facing me now. Where did you go after you sold the ring? I asked in a tone less accusatory. The hotel and casino on the Miccosukee Indian Reservation. It's the one where you can wear sunglasses indoors and at night and blend in with all the other poker players. It's also outside the jurisdiction of local law enforcement, I said. Yes, I'm aware of that. I panicked, but I'm not totally stupid. How did you get there? I got a ride. From a stranger. There's a coffee shop not far from Pawn 24. I didn't go in. I waited outside until someone who seemed safe came along. A couple of girls came by for a jolt of caffeine after a night of clubbing. I told them that my asshole boyfriend hooked up with another woman and left me stranded, that I needed a ride back to my hotel at the casino, and that I was afraid to call a taxi at 3 a.m. because just last week, a woman had been raped by a Miami cab driver. The part about the asshole boyfriend made me squirm a little.
Weren't you afraid that they might see your picture on the news the next day and identify you?
It seemed worth the risk. The only thing newsworthy to these girls is their personal Facebook posts. I sank a little deeper into the couch, my emotions all over the map. I didn't believe all of it, but if any of it was true, I was sorry that I'd left her alone in the house. I tried to keep reminding myself to be glad that she was alive and that she hadn't been butchered by a sociopath, but I was mad as hell that she'd put me and everyone else through this nightmare.
So you just sat in a hotel room the entire weekend while all this was going on?
I was exhausted when I got to the room. By the time I woke Saturday afternoon, this had snowballed into something I hadn't really envisioned.
You went missing. What did you think it would become?
I don't know, Abe.
She was so loud it startled both of us.
Sorry. I didn't mean to yell, she said. I panicked, and I realized pretty quickly that it was a terrible idea.
People were going to think I was nuts. The thought of having to explain myself to the police and the media was making me sick to my stomach. Then on Sunday, I saw my mother on television at that press conference with my father, and I knew this had to end.
Which leads us to where we are now, said Winters. Here's the plan that Angeline and I have agreed to.
Plan for what?
The announcement of a return. There is no upside to holding a press conference and throwing her to the wolves. We'll release a YouTube video. The videographer is setting up now in the main conference room. Angelina will read a statement that has been prepared by my media relations consultant.
You hired a publicist?
No, a media relations consultant.
It's the same thing.
We're not promoting a reality television show here, Abe. Everything down to the titles of the people on our team must reinforce the notion that we are not spinning anything. Our focus is only on the clarity of our message.
What's the message?
Simple, he said. We are grateful to the law enforcement agencies that apprehended Mr. Salvo and brought an end to this series of brutal murders. We are thankful that Angelina is no longer living in constant fear for her life. We regret the inconvenience caused by a poor decision that was driven by that fear.
We, meaning Angelina and me?
And her parents. The four of you will appear together in the video.
Where are your parents?
I asked my wife. Winters answered for her. They're in the conference room with the videographer.
Am I supposed to say anything?
No. You and Angelina's folks are there for support. But the written press release will contain a quote from you, he said, as he handed me the one-page draft.
I read it. My line was a single sentence. I'm just happy to have Angelina back, and we're really looking forward to getting our lives back to normal.
You good with that? Asked Winters.
I still had questions, even some doubts about Angelina's explanation. Angelina seemed to pick up on my hesitation. She returned to a seat right beside me on the couch and she squeezed my hand. Abe, you are glad I'm back, aren't you? What kind of husband would hesitate to say that he was happy to have his wife back? That wasn't the issue.
We need to get this out now, Winter said firmly.
Are you on board or not, Abe? I recognized the tone of voice. I'd used it myself when nudging reluctant witnesses.
Winters was telling me to be glad that my wife was about to say to the world that she had run only out of her fear of Cutter, and not because she feared her husband as well. The Angelina Express was leaving the station. I could get on the train, or I could stand aside and give her attorney good reason to advise his client to throw me under it.
The statement's fine, I said.
Thank you, he said. I'll tell my consultant to blast it right now. Winters had his consultant on speed dial.
He told her to let it rip and then hung up and advised me of the next step. In 10 minutes, I'll follow up with a personal phone call to Agent Santos and each of the agencies on the Cutter task force.
I'd like to call Detective Riddell myself, I said.
No, we have to stay on message and speak with one voice, he said, meaning his.
Riddell is my friend.
He's a cop, said Winters.
Please listen to him, Abe. He knows what he's doing.
And I don't. Winters got another call. I assumed it was his publicist, a media relations consultant. It was a brief conversation, and he seemed even more energized as he hung up and spoke to us. The script for the YouTube video is ready, Angelina. Let's go down to the conference room and do a dry run. I want the video to launch as soon after the press release as possible. Abe, the most important thing you can do right now is work on those bags under your eyes.
I have bags?
No, that's my point. You should. And the world needs to see them. I'll have the videographer's assistant come and do your makeup. Angelina gave me a half smile. See? He's good, right? I nodded without heart.
Good isn't the word for it, I said,
as my wife and her lawyer walked out the door. Chapter 56. We did the video in one take. The only glitch was me. I refused to wear makeup, bags or no bags beneath my eyes. It really didn't matter. I was the loving husband seated on my wife's right. Jake and Margaret were the relieved parents on their daughter's left. The focus was on Angelina, who was pitch perfect as she read her prepared statement.
I am deeply sorry for the pain I have caused my family and friends, and for the trouble and inconvenience I caused law enforcement and so many volunteers who came forward to help. Decisions made out of fear are never good, and I made a terrible decision that deceived all of you. I have no right to your forgiveness, but I hope you will understand that I truly was acting out of fear for my life. It was only because I felt as though I had no choice.
She paused in the right places. Her voice quaked convincingly. The videographer needed 30 minutes to finalize it. The YouTube launch was scheduled for 9 a.m. sharp, but the media frenzy had begun even earlier with the written press release, which by 8:30 had gone viral. I'd turned off my phone for the video shoot, and when I powered it on, my inbox populated with a flood of messages and missed call updates. Most were from people I didn't know, random journalists and bloggers looking for quotes to flesh out the press release. But others mattered. I owed Carmen and Ridd an explanation. Agent Santos as well.
I need to return some calls, I told Winters.
We speak with one voice, he reminded me.
Horseshit. Abe, please, said Angelina. At least until the media frenzy dies down, let the press release and the YouTube video do the talking for us, and let Jeffrey handle any questions.
My cell rang again. Another number I didn't recognize. I ignored it and put the phone on vibrate.
That's fine for strangers, I said. Not for my friends. Especially my friends in law enforcement. They stepped up to help without me even asking.
The major players are all on my call list, said Winters.
It needs to come from me. I'm a prosecutor, for God's sake. I work with these folks. I can't look them in the eye again if I don't give them a personal explanation of what happened.
Winters seemed to understand that there was no debating it.
Fine, he said,
but stay on message. And be careful using a cell phone. This goes for you too, Angelina. The media is filled with eavesdroppers, and your only safe bet is a landline or a face-to-face conversation.
I agreed.
but if I used his landline, Law Office of Jeffrey Winters would pop up on caller ID every time I phoned a friend in law enforcement. Not cool. It was time for me to leave, and not just to make phone calls. I had questions for my wife, and I wanted answers away from her lawyer.
When can you and I talk alone? I asked her.
Let's discuss that, said Winters.
I was talking to Angelina, I said.
I understand, but the question of where everyone goes from here is next on my agenda.
I just want to have a conversation with my wife.
And you will, as soon as we've sorted this out. I've made arrangements for Angelina's parents to change hotels and stay here in Miami for a couple days. The media won't be able to reach them. By the end of the week or so, when they feel rested and ready to travel, they'll take a nice long vacation.
They're looking into New Zealand, said Angelina.
Perfect, said Winters.
I have a job, I said. I'm not going into hiding or running to the other side of the world.
That's not what I have in mind for you and Angelina. Your lives should return to normal.
Agreed, I said. The sooner the better.
My plan is to get Miami-Dade police to lift the crime scene designation from your house immediately. I'd like to see you sleep there tonight.
I wondered if that meant in the same bed. That sounds good to me, I said, glancing at Angelina. Me too, she said, without making eye contact.
Then that's our goal, said Winters. But first, there's work to do. The media presence will be huge. My preference is that neither of you leave this building until my consultant and I have choreographed everything from the car ride home to the way you look at each other as you walk through the front door.
That's not necessary, I said. Angelina, I say we do this right now and get it over with.
No, 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 said Winters. The only image I want out for public consumption today is the YouTube video. Let it play out for a good 8 to 12 hours.
That gives us time to rehearse. I don't need to rehearse walking into my own house.
You'll be peppered with questions the minute you step out of the car. Saying the wrong thing, or even just looking into the camera the wrong way, can undo all the good we've just done. My consultant will role-play with you and make sure you're prepared for that first live encounter with the media.
I looked at my wife. Angelina, let's go home. Why are you being so difficult? She asked.
I'm being difficult? Why have we not spoken a word to each other so far without your lawyer in the room?
That's not fair, Abe. I've made some terrible decisions in the last few days. I need good advice.
Mine's free. Jeffrey's is objective. Jeffrey is looking out for Jeffrey.
There. It needed to be said.
I'd believed it from the day I'd first met him at the state attorney's office. His determination to turn Angelina into a media darling and YouTube sensation had convinced me that it was truer than ever.
Abe, you should apologize to Jeffrey right now.
No need, said Winters. Abe is entitled to his opinion.
They were both right, but this charade was all wrong, and I was not about to apologize.
Abe, she said, nudging. I wasn't biting.
I've seen this before, said Winters. Cops, prosecutors, anyone in law enforcement. They have no use for criminal defense lawyers. Nothing personal, Abe. But I prepared Angelina for your reaction.
All I want is 30 minutes of alone time with my wife.
And you'll get it, he said. Maybe as soon as tonight, if all goes well. But these next 12 hours are crucial. Angelina needs a lawyer. As her attorney, I have advised her to avoid spending time alone with anyone who will try to convince her that she doesn't need one. Even her husband.
Especially her husband.
I didn't say that, said Winters. I suspected that you would fall into that category. Your behavior this morning confirms it.
I'm going to make a few phone calls, I said, rising.
Winters seemed happy that I was leaving. Remember what I said about the cell phone? The receptionist can set you up in a conference room with a landline.
Thanks, but I'll make the calls from my office.
You're leaving? Asked Angelina.
Yeah. Are you coming?
She looked at her lawyer, but she didn't move.
Winters had her under a sit-and-stay command worthy of the Westminster Kennel Club.
I didn't think so, I said, and I left the room.
The morning rush hour had the courthouse district in a chokehold, and it made no sense to put off my calls until I could get to a landline. I phoned Carmen from my car while stuck in traffic.
This could turn into one hell of a mess, she said. My first call had been to RID, but it went to voicemail. Carmen was next.
She'd read the press release from Jeffrey Winters, and I told her about the YouTube video that was ready to launch. Of course, she was glad that Angelina was unharmed, but that didn't alleviate her concerns about the growing mess.
You mean the media? I asked.
That part I can handle, she said. I'm talking about Agent Santos.
Have you talked to her?
Yes. She has questions that I simply can't answer, and if she doesn't get answers, this is going to snowball into a very bad situation. It's a federal crime to fake your own disappearance and disrupt the investigative work of a multi-jurisdictional task force.
We know.
That's why Angelina has a lawyer. Listen to what I'm saying, Abe. Santos doesn't believe that your wife pulled this off alone. She thinks that the only way this could have happened was if someone on the inside ran misdirection and got the cops to ignore leads and look the other way. Someone like her husband.
That's crazy.
Even if she said that, it must have been in some kind of brainstorming session. She can't actually believe it. Why would I get involved in a stunt like that?
You're right. I don't know what's inside Santos' head.
But I can think of one reason you might. Maybe you and Angelina both came to the conclusion that the only way to keep her safe from Cutter was to make Cutter think she was killed by a copycat.
A copycat.
I thought again of how Angelina's phone had ended up on the Tamiami Trail not far from where Tyler's body had been recovered.
Carmen, you know I would never do something like this. I could be disbarred.
Yes, you could.
Is that what Santos wants?
As I said, I don't know where Santos is headed with this. Maybe she's just pissed off that the media is paying more attention to Angelina's return than to the FBI's apprehension of a serial killer. But my advice to you is to get to the bottom of it.
Good advice, I said.
I will. I hung up and stopped at the traffic light. I was about to call Santos, but my thoughts returned to Carmen's mention of a copycat killer, Angelina's cell phone, and her emphatic denial of any knowledge of how it had ended up near Tyler's recovery site.
No, I didn't toss my phone on the Tamiami Trail. You're asking the wrong person.
It made me wonder, who was the right person?
Traffic was finally moving, but I pulled into a gas station and called RID. It went to voicemail again. I dialed three more times without success. It was possible that he'd been tied up all morning, and it ran against my better judgment to think that he was anything other than too busy to answer his phone. But I was pretty sure RID was avoiding my calls. I made a quick three-point turn, and the tires squealed as I started back to the law office. Chapter 57. Victoria Santos had one priority: find Tyler Tompkins' killer. She knew it wasn't Cutter, and not just because a black woman from Miami-Dade didn't meet the victim profile of a white female from Palm Beach County who dated black men. There was no sadistic video of Tyler and Tommy Salvo's computer, and no sign of Tyler's DNA in his kill room or anywhere else in his house or car. It technically wasn't the FBI's jurisdiction to solve a homicide unrelated to a federal offense. But legal technicalities aside, this one was different. Victoria had been lied to. The YouTube video had nearly sent Victoria over the edge. It was vintage Jeffrey Winters, a lightweight criminal defense showman who fancied himself a master in the courtroom of public opinion. Nothing would satisfy Victoria more than to hoist Winters by his own petard, to use his own strategy against him to crack the Tyler Tompkins case. She'd watched Angelina's mea culpa video 3 times, then drove herself to the Beckham residence. An army of television journalists rushed toward her vehicle. She had to force the driver's side door open and push back the crowd just to get out of her car. They surrounded her as she cut across the lawn, and questions hit her from every direction. Does the FBI have any comment on this morning's video? Will any charges be brought? Why is the Beckham house still a crime scene? At this stage, it was in Victoria's interest not to answer any of those questions. She forged ahead, eyes forward, no comment. The reporters followed her all the way to the police tape at the front steps. Victoria ducked under the yellow ribbon of authority, went inside and closed the door behind her. Detective Reyes of the Miami-Dade Domestic Violence Unit was waiting in the living room. A media circus out there, said Reyes. Victoria looked out the front window. She recognized many of the same teams that had provided Find Angelina news coverage over the weekend, but even more had joined the frenzy for this latest development.
They smell blood.
Victoria took another step into the living room, then glanced back at the spot where they'd found the shattered beer bottle on Saturday morning.
And I smell spouse abuse.
Smell won't get me a conviction, said Reyes.
No, but I'm pretty certain that a physical examination of Angelina's body will.
A woman doesn't run out of her house after midnight and fake her own disappearance if she isn't scared to death of her husband. There has to be a bruise or a cut somewhere on her body. The detective shook her head. You can force a victim to submit to a physical examination. I've tried.
That's where I can help you, said Victoria. How?
You can't force Angelina to submit to an examination. But if she's staring at federal charges and 5 years in prison for faking her disappearance and obstruction of justice, she might very well consent to it.
Good of you to help, said Reyes. But I'm assuming that you didn't throw yourself back into this mess out of the goodness of your heart. What do you want from me?
Victoria stepped closer, her expression very serious.
Spouse abuse is the tip of the iceberg here. I'm looking for Tyler Tompkins' killer.
Don't you have that in Cutter?
No.
You should be talking to Detective Riddell about this.
Detective Riddell talks too much to Abe Beckham.
Are you sure Cutter is not your man? Is there nothing to connect him to Tyler Tompkins?
Victoria wasn't ready to share Tommy Salvo's mention of his encounter with Tyler at the Cortinas Plantation in Nicaragua. Not yet.
Let me put it this way. I have one thing that may connect Cutter to Tyler Tompkins.
On the night of Tyler's memorial service, I looked across the street from the funeral home and saw a glowing orange dot in the dark parking lot. Someone was standing there watching and smoking a cigarette. Tommy Salvo is a chain smoker.
So it was him.
He denied it at first. Then we started talking about Cutter in the third person, and he insinuated that it might have been him. But I led him there in my questioning. It fits the stereotype of the serial killer who watches the funeral and visits the grave of his victims, except that Tyler wasn't his victim. Maybe he went there out of curiosity just to see why people thought Tyler Tompkins was one of Cutter's victims.
Maybe. But I don't think so.
Okay. You know someone was smoking in the dark and watching from across the street. If not him, who?
That is the question, said Victoria.
The answer depends on what you find here as part of your domestic violence investigation.
I hope this doesn't make me sound like I have sawdust between my ears, but you want to tell me exactly what you're hoping I find here?
Victoria slowly crossed the living room, walking around the cocktail table and past each of the end tables.
There's not a single ashtray anywhere in this house, is there?
None that I've seen, and none listed in the initial CIS inventory, said Reyes. She walked to the drapes and sniffed the fabric.
No obvious smoking odor?
I can't say that I've detected any, but that wasn't the focus of the forensic team's investigation when Mrs. Beckham went missing.
Here's what I'm looking for, said Victoria. Anything, and I mean anything, that tells you Angelina Beckham is a closet smoker.
How does that relate to my domestic violence investigation?
It doesn't. Trust me on this, said Victoria. You'll see.
Chapter 58. I parked right beside Jeffrey Winter's shiny new Tesla and hurried into his building. The elevator was packed, no room for me, so I ran up the stairwell. Sweat beaded at my brow, and I was breathing heavily as I entered his suite, raced past the receptionist, and entered his office. Angelina and her parents were with him.
Angelina, I have to talk to you, I said.
They looked at me with confusion, probably wondering why I was panting like a St. Bernard.
Sorry, I ran up the steps, I explained. But Angelina, this is urgent.
Give me 5 minutes alone and hear what I have to say. I didn't rush all the way back here to tell you to fire your lawyer.
She glanced at Winters, who gave her the green light.
You can use the conference room, he said.
We walked across the hall together. It wasn't as large as Winter's office, but it was plenty big for the two of us. As I closed the door, I wondered if the room was bugged and if Winters could hear everything. I didn't care. I was just glad to have Angelina's undivided ear. We took seats at the conference table.
What is going on, Abe?
I was still winded and took a moment. I've been thinking about your story.
It's not a story, she said. It's the truth.
She was starting to sound like her lawyer.
Okay, let me start again.
I paused. I knew Winters would hold me to my 5 minute limit and would knock on the door soon, but what I needed to say wasn't something I could just blurt out. It was a delicate situation.
Angelina, I've met a lot of victims as a prosecutor. A lot of them have had horrible things done to them. No one ever wants to talk about it. It's never easy. Some are able to recall everything, and they can describe it in amazing detail. Some remember what happened, but they just can't talk about it. A few seem to have no memory of it. They blocked it out for the sake of their own survival.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about you, I said.
It doesn't sound like it. I'm worried about your story.
It's not a, sorry, your statement.
It may be the truth, I said, making air quotes, but not all of it sounds true.
It has holes.
I'm having trouble believing it. I don't think the public is going to believe it either.
That's your opinion.
Let me be more specific. I believe you got scared after I left. You did leave the house thinking that you'd be safer from Cutter if you went into hiding. Maybe you were even so pissed off at me that you decided to hurt me and sell Samantha's ring for money.
I didn't do it to spite you.
Stay with me on this, I said. Maybe you got yourself into a sketchy neighborhood at 2 o'clock in the morning and something bad happened.
I didn't do anything wrong. I know you didn't.
When I say something bad happened, I mean something bad happened to you.
She didn't answer.
Something that you don't want to talk about. That you don't want to have to describe in painful detail to me, your mother, your father, the police, a jury, or anyone else.
She shook her head, but I read it more as confusion than disagreement. Why would you think that?
It started with your phone.
You don't really have a good explanation of how it ended up on the Tamiami Trail near the recovery site for Tyler's body.
You said Jerko made you give it to him.
When I pushed for a better answer, all you could say is that I wasn't asking the right person.
It suddenly occurred to me that maybe the right person
did more than take your phone. You're overanalyzing this, Abe. Am I? Anyone who has watched the news in the last 2 weeks knows all about Tyler Tompkins, knows where the body was found, and knows that the police are looking for a serial killer. That's the kind of information a guy can use to his advantage if he spots a woman alone in the pawn shop district of Little Havana. Let's say it's late, the woman is desperate, and she needs a ride. He stops. She knows better than to get in, but he pulls her into his car and violates her. For some reason, he lets her go, or maybe she fights and gets away, but he has her purse and her cell phone, and he wants to throw the police off his trail. He tosses the victim's phone out the car window on the Tamiami Trail. He gets the police looking for Cutter, not him. We were pushing up against the 5-minute deadline, but I gave Angelina 30 seconds to consider my words. Had she been a stranger, I would have known what to say next. I would have told her that none of this was her fault, that there was no shame in having once been a victim, and that now she was a survivor. I would have explained that too many sexual assaults went unreported, and that it was important to catch the guy who had done this to her and make sure he didn't do it again. But the script went out the window when speaking to Angelina, and for the life of me, I couldn't tell what was going through her head. Finally, she spoke. Abe, I understand what you're doing. I know you're trying to help. But you can't put words in my mouth. That would be a story. Angelina, please, no, Abe. What you just said may sound more like the truth, but I'm sticking with the real truth. There was a crisp knock on the door, and Winters entered. Can we have another minute, please? I said, annoyed.
Both of you need to see this, he said as he grabbed the television remote.
The flat-screen TV on the wall switched on, and Winters put on the local morning edition of the Action News Channel.
They're at your house again, said Winters.
The media? I asked.
The police, he said as he increased the volume.
On screen was the same Action News reporter who had interviewed me on Saturday after Angelina's disappearance. She appeared much less subdued in this broadcast, a genuine air of excitement about her. We expected to see Angelina Beckham return home this morning, she said into the camera, microphone in hand. Instead, it is the Miami-Dade police who have returned. While we have no word yet as to what law enforcement is looking for, clearly, the Beckham residence remains an active crime scene. The camera switched to a broader angle from the sidewalk and panned across our front yard and driveway. I recognized Agent Santo's car parked behind the MDPD squad cars. Isn't that your friend? Asked Angelina.
You mean Santos?
No, the guy behind the reporter. Isn't that Detective Riddell? I rose and walked around the conference table for a closer look at the TV. In the background, behind the Action News reporter, a man was running up the driveway and trying to break free from other reporters on his way toward my house. It sure is, I said. Winters went to the phone.
This needs to end. I'll speak directly to the chief of police about this.
I stepped around the table and pressed the disconnect button, ending his call in mid-dial.
What are you doing?
He asked. I looked at Angelina.
Do you swear I'm wrong? That I was totally off base? That what I just said to you didn't happen?
She met my stare. It didn't happen. Then I'll take care of Riddell. She looked at me with concern.
How?
I'm going home. That's crazy, said Winters. It's a hornet's nest. You can't go there.
Watch me, I said.
What the hell do you think you're going to do when you get there?
He asked. I glanced back at the television to see a mob of reporters pushing against the crime scene tape and calling my friend's name as he disappeared through my front door.
I'm gonna get right in Rid's face, I said.
Chapter 59.
The media assault began the instant I stepped out of my car. Reporters pushed, shoved, and jockeyed for position as I walked up the sidewalk. This wasn't the first time that microphones had been thrust in my face, but past experiences had been on the courthouse steps, never on my front lawn. I didn't run or bully my way through the crowd, and I tried not to look annoyed as I stopped and delivered the short and innocuous statement that I'd rehearsed during the car ride. I want to thank each of you for the professional manner in which the media did its job while respecting our privacy after Angelina went missing. The apology that she issued this morning was from the heart. I hope that you will continue to respect our privacy, especially around our home, now that this is behind us. Again, thank you. I continued toward the house. The mob moved with me, surrounding me. I was the glob of jelly trying to find some way to squish his way out of the center of the donut. Their questions ran together. Where is Angelina? Why are the police here? What are they looking for? But I ignored them. I ducked beneath the police tape, well aware of how it would look on the news if I ran up the front steps and slammed the door on the media. I walked calmly, turned and waved to the cameras, and went inside. My camera smile disappeared immediately. Santos was waiting for me. Your house is still a crime scene, she said. You can't come in here. This is bullshit, I said. There can't be a crime scene where there's no crime. Detective Reyes stepped out of the kitchen and joined us. It's a domestic violence investigation, Abe. That's not true. I was watching the TV coverage and saw Riddell come into the house. I sent him away. Homicide is not involved. Right. I'm an abuser, I said with a shake of my head. We're back to this again? Really? I'm doing my job, said Reyes. There was a broken beer bottle on the floor. The lab confirmed that the blood on one of the shards was Angelina's. I knew about the blood, but not the lab report. The confirmation of the connection to Angelina didn't come as a shock. She probably stepped on it. Your physical examination revealed a bruise on your arm. I already explained this once. I banged my arm when I fell at my brother-in-law's apartment. Maybe you did, and maybe we'd believe you if we were to conduct a physical examination of Angelina's body and found nothing. I kept my anger in check, but I couldn't take the edge off my voice entirely. The only abuse in this house is an abuse of police power. If you're looking for something, get a search warrant. And by the way, I said, my gaze shifting towards Santos, since when is the FBI involved in a domestic violence investigation? We were locked in a stare down, and I seriously wanted an answer. Let's talk in the kitchen, she said. Reyes seemed befuddled to be out of the loop so suddenly, but she deferred and stayed behind. I followed Santos into the kitchen. We stood on opposite sides of the counter where fewer than 3 days earlier Ritt had wolfed down a plate of Angelina's osso buco. You could force us to get a warrant, Santos said. But if you think the media is stirred up now, wait until they hear that a warrant has been issued and the police are searching your house. I'm actually doing you a favor by keeping it low-key and at least creating the impression that we're here simply to wrap up a crime scene.
You're doing me a favor, I said, scoffing. The FBI is doing itself a favor. I see what's going on here. My house was a task force crime scene. Now that Cutter is in custody, your authority as task force coordinator ends, and the FBI goes back to catching bank robbers and to life as J. Edgar Hoover intended it. You're using Detective Reyes and this domestic violence bullshit to reach beyond federal jurisdiction and get inside my house. What are you looking for, Santos? What are you really looking for?
Cutter didn't kill Tyler Tompkins. I want to know who did.
If she wasn't one of Cutter's victims,
Then it's none of your business. Step aside and let the locals investigate.
She came closer, her eyes narrowing. You'd like that, wouldn't you? Let your buddy Riddell handle the investigation into Tyler Tompkins' murder.
I wanted to push back, but I could see that it would get me nowhere. I needed to go on the offensive. All right. If you're determined to stick your FBI nose where it doesn't belong, you might as well stick it in the right place. When's the last time you knocked on Brian Belter's door?
I'm on to Belter.
Not as much as you should be.
He's in big-time cover-up mode.
It's not surprising that a law firm would fight a subpoena to examine the emails and computers of one of its partners, especially a partner like Tyler, who was one of Big Sugar's most trusted advisors.
I'm not talking about your subpoena. Belter offered me a bribe yesterday. $250,000.
Yesterday? And you're just getting around to telling me today?
I told Carmen last night.
I lied.
And I wasn't entirely sure why. It was becoming a bad habit when questions from Santos made me uncomfortable.
Is the state attorney's office going to convene a grand jury?
I don't know.
I haven't even written up a full report yet.
Believe it or not, I've had other things on my mind in the last 16 hours.
That much was true.
What did Belter want you to do for $250,000?
I hesitated. Not sure how much to tell Santos before having a fuller discussion with Carmen. But Carmen wasn't the one I needed out of my house. A little cooperation among law enforcement officers could go a long way. At least, that had been my experience prior to meeting Agent Santos.
He was dancing around a bit and I shut him down hard. But I have a pretty good idea of where he was going.
You want to share it?
You want to quit busting my ass?
Maybe. Let's hear your theory.
Again, I hesitated. I had no reason to believe that my theory would completely knock me off her shit list. But I could at least slow down the train.
All right. But bear in mind that this involves some supposition on my part. Belter believes that the prime suspect in Tyler Tompkins' murder will be someone who slept with her. I think he was angling for a truce between the two of us. He won't point the finger at me if I don't point the finger at him, so long as we both point the finger at Mr. Cortinas.
Cortinas was sleeping with Tyler Tompkins?
Do you know that for a fact?
I know that Tyler used a prepaid cell phone to talk to certain men. One of the numbers connected to her phone still has never been linked to an identifiable caller.
Am I right?
She didn't answer.
I thought so,
I said.
Belter says it was Alberto Cortinas. He had his own prepaid cell that he used when he and Tyler talked rendezvous.
Santos studied my expression carefully as she considered my words. My candor seemed to have repaired some of the damage, for the time being at least.
Thank you for this, she said.
You're welcome.
We'll be out of your house in 1 hour. The crime scene tape will be gone. You and your wife are free to return.
Fair enough.
Fair enough, I said.
She turned and went back into the living room. I left through the back door and cut through the neighbor's yard to the next street over. The media could have my car. A cab would suit me just fine.
Chapter 60. I walked 4 blocks from my house and decided against a taxi. I took a shot and called Rid instead.
This time he answered.
Why have you been avoiding me all morning? I asked.
You think I got one case I work on?
Don't bullshit me, Rid. I went by my house after I saw you on the news, but you were already gone. Did Santos and Detective Reyes actually tell you to leave?
Yep.
They said it's not a homicide investigation, but that's not the real reason they kicked me out.
What's the real reason?
I talk too much,
to you, which needs to stop, Abe. He sounded downtrodden, which usually meant he was fed up with police bureaucracy. Did someone come down on you for being too chummy with me in this investigation?
Nah, he said with a heavy dose of sarcasm. What would give you that idea?
I tell you what, I said. How about you just swing by and give me a ride?
Didn't you hear what I just said?
You don't have to tell me a thing.
I talk, you listen. Give me that much?
I know what I should give you, he said, grumbling. Then he hung up.
I took that as a yes and texted him my location. 5 minutes later, Reed picked me up at a gas station in an unmarked police car.
Where to?
He asked.
Boomerang.
He knew the joke, but he wasn't smiling.
He pulled into traffic and headed toward my office. I wasn't sure where to begin, so he started.
You got a big problem on your hands, Abe. Bigger than you think.
He hung a left turn toward the river. It was the long way to the state attorney's office, the scenic route. I could see that he was conflicted about whether he should even be having a conversation with me, but there was something he needed to tell me.
I've been thinking about the photographs of you and Tyler Tompkins at the restaurant, he said, keeping his eyes on the road.
What about them?
How did Angelina get them?
They were left in her mailbox.
Who left them there?
Cutter.
How did Cutter get them?
Cutter was stalking his victims. We've been over this. He made another turn. We were cruising along the riverfront, past a Panamanian freighter that was headed upriver at no wake speed.
That's bullshit, said Ridd.
You sound like Santos, I said.
He glanced over in my direction.
I agree with Santos.
Agree with her on what?
I watched the video of Cutter's interview. He denies he killed Tyler. He denies he sent the photos to Angelina, denies that he even knew who Angelina was. The black ash on Tyler's face doesn't fit into Cutter's profile. The crazy son of a bitch summed it up pretty good himself. Why color a black face black? It makes no sense. Unless you're trying to make it look like Cutter sent the photos. I waited for him to continue, but he stopped. We drove another block. I got the impression that he would have liked to tell me more, but he'd already gone further than allowed. I nudged him along.
Who would do that, Ridd?
If Cutter didn't send the photos, who did?
I was going to ask you that question.
I'd give you the same answer I gave Carmen, I said. We talked back when all this started, right after you and Santos went to Belter's office and accused him of sleeping with Tyler. Sending those photographs was his return shot across the bow. His way of saying, you ruin my marriage, I'll ruin Abe Beckham.
Whoever sent those photographs had to know the killer's signature.
That's not Belter.
So it's probably Cutter. The only other option is someone in law enforcement.
Or someone married to law enforcement.
A siren wailed behind us. Reed steered to the right to let an ambulance pass.
Santos says it was Angelina.
He was pulling back into traffic, not looking at me as he spoke,
and I wondered if I'd heard him correctly.
What did you say?
Santos thinks Angelina sent them to herself.
The ambulance siren faded, but things were no less clear to me.
How would she know the signature of the ash on the face?
Maybe you slipped. Maybe she overheard you talking on the telephone.
I'm more careful than that, but let's put that aside. Why would she send those photographs to herself?
To create the impression that she didn't know you were cheating on her until after Tyler was dead.
I didn't cheat on Angelina.
You're missing the point. It's not a matter of whether you were or you weren't actually cheating on your wife.